From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello to everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, great to be back here in the studio for another
episode. It's great to be back.
Of Bob After Dark.
Yes, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm super happy to be back.
Yeah, no, I can tell. You're wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Look, man, only got a few more weeks. Enjoy the Hawaiian variant of Bob, and then guess what comes next?
Flannel. Fookie Bob.
Flannel Bob.
Oh, yeah, Flannel Bob. Yeah, and Flannel Bob is probably, would you say, the most famous of the Bobs?
Is it your favorite? Because whatever your favorite is going to be the correct answer.
I think they're all my favorite, Bob, but we're enjoying this Hawaiian version of you right now as it is in the summertime.
Yes. So if this is your first time ever watching the Bob After Dark, that we are your weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite form of toast.
Oh.
Like, what's your favorite bread just to toast and eat?
Like in a restaurant, they ask you a toast. I just like a white toast. I'm very uneventful, I guess, but yeah, white toast, put some jelly on it, butter. That's good enough for me. How about you, Bob?
You know, I love sourdough.
Sourdough.
Oh, my word. There you go. I blanked on that one. I had something planned in my head, and I just blanked.
Sourdough.
But I digress. Count, let's get your weekend update or week's update. What's been going on with you?
Yeah, Bob, of course, summer solstice in full swing. Still continuing on the summer solstice throughout the summer.
Still hot. I had to turn the air conditioner back on.
Yeah, it goes up and down. But yeah, Bob, just kind of enjoying it while you can, right? Before the summer winds down, and then we switch over. But as we sit here recording in mid-August, we're having a good time.
100%, man. And you, it's good to be enjoying the summer as much as I've been going through my health stuff lately, which I just feel like I've been going through nonstop since last year post heart attack. You know, it's really cool to have like that ability to be here, say hi to folk. And, you know, it's good to be enjoying summer as much as you can while you have it. I'm sure most of the kiddos are back to school or prepping to go back to school. So maybe you guys are listening to this on your car rides to school, kiddos, or perhaps the older ones going to college for their first time.
Stay in school,
study your sciences, or maybe you'll go to film school like me and Count Panic did.
Yeah, technically that was the new Academy of Motion Pictures right there. Look where it got.
Or, you know, you could study film and production like Count Panic and I, and you could end up, you too could end up right here hosting a paranormal show on your local radio.
People want. Got to give a shout out. South Shore Steph. South Shore Steph is listening.
Hey, South Shore Steph.
I am being told. So.
Well, what's up, South Shore Steph? Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's but anywho, Count, we split the show up into two parts. The first part of the show is the weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the weird and unusual. Any kind of news story like lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, or weird advances that borderline on science fiction. Or you know, just all out weirdness. And then we also have the lore of the week, which is where I get to the meat and potatoes of the episode, Count. That's where we look at whatever the topic is for the week and we dive right into it.
Yeah.
So without further ado, speaking of diving right into it, how about we get ready with these news stories?
Yeah, let's hear them.
Spooky news stories!
Womp, womp, womp. Is that a new feature?
I thought about it.
Yeah.
post-editing note. If you guys hear that, hear me putting something in there, it's because I found the correct spooky news story sound. But anyway, I only have one story from Tim Benall this week, our old pal Tim Benall, who writes the articles for Coast to Coast AM. I just want you to know, Tim, that if you're listening to this, you save me every week. Not every week, but you save me a lot of times, and I sincerely appreciate that. But anywho, so our old pal Tim Benall wrote this article, British fortune teller claims her cat is psychic.
Okay.
Yes. All right. So a British fortune teller claims to have a proverbial helping paw in her divination work by the way of her psychic cat. The weird assertion was reportedly put forward by tarot reader Sinem Salman, who recalled realizing that there was something special about her feline named Bonjunk last year as he began gravitating to her soothsaying sessions in their home. Every time I open my cards and get the cloth ready, he's here, said the fortune teller, marveled. He sits there and watches and listens to me while I'm doing my readings. However, beyond merely being a passive observer, Salman said that Bonjunk provides remarkable insights and suggests that he also has psychic powers. Almost immediately as I start to read, she revealed, he tells me that the client is feeling in their thoughts, what's going on in their minds, what's troubling them, and if they need clarity around the situation. Additionally, Salman noted that Bonjunk has been known to point out specific tarot cards that the cat presumably feels are of particular importance. Salman mused that the cat is unlike any of the pets that she and her family had previously owned, though did not explain what might be behind the animal's perceived gift. Be that as it may, the curious creature is now a constant companion during her readings and allegedly offering its own unique revelations. Now, Con, I'm going to pass it to you. Before I do, I'm going to let you know that everybody's going to be extremely surprised what I got to say about this article. But you first.
This
the hashtag panics take.
Yeah, well, cats, you know, kind of unrelated, are very valuable throughout the society, throughout the time and all, but yeah, it's very very unique there, Bob. Of course, cats, when we talk about cats, you gotta bring up my personal favorite cat, the Yule Cat.
It's the Yule Cat psychic. I feel if the Yule Cat was gonna paw cards off a table, it would probably knock down the entire table.
Yeah,
you know, I think I'm not going to call this fortune teller hooey, because there's something to this. But there's a lot more, like, esoteric, metaphysical, like, explanations behind this than just a very simple, my cat psychic. I will give it to you extremely loosely, right?
Yeah.
People of the witchy persuasion, whatever path they follow, pagan, whatever it might be, whatever your spiritual path is, sometimes comes with a familiar. What is a familiar? They're a tool used but as a living entity that a practitioner can kind of channel their energy through to be able to kind of get more out of it. They're essentially a second hand in dealing with the weird and unusual. I've been around familiars in the past. The cat will be able to point out what spot of the house might have a spirit involved. Cats have that third eye thing going on where they see things, and I truly believe they see spirits 1,000% in their true form. So same with dogs. So what this fortune teller I think is trying to say is this is their familiar without trying to be weird about it. Because if the cat's getting excited during your, you know, your work,
yeah,
kind of leads to being like, well, that's my familiar.
Yeah.
They might just either may not be familiar with the term, or they're illegitimate practicing something witchy persuasion vibe, and they just don't want to use the word familiar.
Yeah.
Now, see, I'm more of a dog person myself, Count, so my familiar would be a puppy, but I also have my very fat tortie Althena. That's like my familiar.
I side with you there, Bob. I'm more, I guess, into dog culture, but nothing wrong with cats.
I got three of them. I love them very much. They're all fat and fed. And
sure, love you.
Some of my favorites. But no, like, I will always be, I've always been a dog person before Vix came into my life with the babies, which is fine. I love my kitties. There's nothing wrong with that. But If I was to sit down and be like, I'm going to summon a familiar, I would say it would definitely be a dog.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Bob.
All right, you ready to move on to our next story?
Yeah, sure.
All right, this one comes from Sky News, and this is written by Dan Whitehead. So this is a Cross the Pond story. Would you buy a six acre Drake's Island near Plymouth with private beach and 15 ghosts?
Sure. Oh, wait.
That's the question of the article, and you're just like, yep. Do we have a caller already?
We do.
Caller, you're on the air.
We'll take a live.
Caller, you're not on the air now. Hello? Caller, you're on the air.
I'm on the air already, Bob?
John, you're calling me early.
Am I on the air already?
Yeah, you're on the air already. John, can you hear us?
Yeah, certainly. Welcome back, Bob.
Oh, thank you, John. It's good to be back. What's going on with you, sir?
Hey, I love all of God's creations, you know, but I tell you what, whatever you tell me about a cat, if it's psychic or whatever, I believe you.
Oh, 100%.
I got cats that look at me in the alley, Bob, when I'm relaxing in the yard, and you know, they got that psychic look, you know, if I see them in the front, looking behind a bush. I don't know, Bob. I mean, you know, I didn't know you had three cats, and I'm not knocking cats. I'm a dog lover, but, you know, they are kind of spooky with me, you know what I mean?
Oh, cats are, look, my tortie likes to sit at the bottom of the stairs and looks up the stairs at nothing for minutes on end. Just sits there and stares up the staircase. Or my favorite is when you're hanging out with a cat and they'll just stare at nothing for, you know, 45 minutes, like, in the direction, and they may get a little freaked out. That's my favorite part. But, yeah, no, 100% terrifying creatures sometimes.
Well, I see people coming out of Big Frank's that are like that, too. They just lay down and stare at the ceiling after, you know.
Couples of five minutes.
So, yeah, I don't know what, but, yeah, anyway, yeah, I just want to throw the cat story in there and, and yeah, glad to hear you back, Bob. I hope everything's going well with you.
As best as it can be, John. As soon as I can remove this next organ, I'll be back to normal.
Nah, you'll be in there. You'll be okay. Just hang in there.
Doing my best, John. Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, Bob. Take care.
You too. Folks, do you want to be like John and make Count Panic get some work done?
Yeah.
219-845-1100. That's 219-845-1100. Call at any point, say hello, give us a thought on what we're talking about, whatever it might be. So you could be like John.
Could be just like him.
Yes, any hoozles. So let's go back to the story from Dan Whitehead. Drake's Island, just 600 yards from Plymouth, is now for sale. It was used as a military defense for hundreds of years with 18th century cannons included with the price. It's complete with a private beach, fortifications, and planning permission for a luxury hotel has been put up for sale. So this entire island had all of these plans, and they did nothing with it. excuse me. It takes less than 10 minutes to reach by boat, and once on land, there is a military history everywhere. From old barracks to artillery batteries, complete with shell shafts and an underground gunpowder storage. It has over 2,000 years of history, the first recorded being 1135, current owner and local businessman Morgan Phillips says. It was a nuclear deterrent of its day, and that's probably why the Spanish Armada never came here. Mr. Phillips bought the island in 2019 for 6 million euros and has worked on securing consent for a 43-bedroom hotel. And he gives guided tours to groups. Plymouth is trying to become a destination, and it's getting there. It's a long way forward with that. What we really need is the island to be taken forward and someone who's got the budget to be able to do that, he explained. The island is named after Sir Francis Drake, who set sail from it to circumnavigate the globe in 1577. It has no fixed guide price, but the renovation costs are estimated at about 25 million euros so far. Ali Rana from property consultants Carter Jonas is leading the sale. The proposals include these outbuildings that are converted into bedrooms, and one of the things the owner was thinking about is using it as a wedding venue where guests would stay there and potentially put a restaurant and cafe at the end. It's one of those opportunities where, with some vision, you could really create something special, Mr. Rana says. Any new owner may not be alone, though. because this is reportedly with 15 residents ghosts on the island, all former military men. If you believe the mediums who come out here, they're all British soldiers, said Mr. Phillips. They are here to protect us. That's what they did when they were here alive, and that's what they're still doing after they're gone. I've seen enough stuff to say that things happen here I can't explain, but it's all really nice stuff, he insists. Hashtag panic stake.
Yeah, you know, when you have a bunch of ghosts there living together as one, you know, you got to kind of respect them all, I guess. But they sound like they're good ghosts. I mean, it doesn't sound like they're bad ghosts. They all seem like fine, outstanding ghosts to me.
100%
yeah.
Count.
Yeah.
Which
is better than bad ghost.
We have a caller?
We have another one, yeah.
Take it live. We'll caller on the air.
On the air.
Tony.
Hello?
Hello.
It's Elise. How are you?
Oh, Elise. Your cousin Elise right there.
Oh, hi, cousin Elise.
Yeah,
how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. We didn't know who Tony was.
We know who... Oh, Count Panic.
I know who Count Panic is. I don't know who Tony is. That's a little confusing.
I apologize.
No, you're good.
You're okay.
I've been watching the show, and I'm very impressed. And Bob, I want to tell you, I witnessed your appearance on Small Town Monsters for the Mothman.
Hey, I was in that movie.
How about that?
What'd you think of my segment?
I was very, very impressed. What I was not impressed with is Small Town Monsters, because at the end they kind of dismissed, you know, saying, well, it could have been this, it could have been that, and I didn't really care for the way they presented it, but I thought you were great.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much. I'm friends with Seth, the documentary filmmaker who does all of those now. Yeah, Seth's a really great guy. His entire crew are fantastic to work with. The ending of the documentary has its criticisms. I'll give it that. But I'm glad you enjoyed my segment. That means a lot to me.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I was very impressed with it. And, you know, I am on YouTube probably watching different articles or different shows on every cryptid out there.
Well, so, hey, you can listen to Bob After Dark weekly. We talk about lots of cryptids here.
I know, I will. And I mean, I really researched so many of the different ones going on right now. It's like, what is going on that there are so many just coming out of the woodwork, you know? It's really strange.
There's a ton. And Elise actually has some cool... We have to get that video footage for some time down the line, because it's some really quick footage of some lights in the sky there, Bob.
Absolutely.
Might be UFO.
Bob, let me tell you, I was in Stuart, Florida, and I looked up in the sky, and there was this little dot. Okay, it looked like a star. And then all of a sudden, it started spinning like a top, you know, and it got real, like, fuzzy. And then, I kid you not, it looked like somebody took it and, like, bounced it in the sky, like you bounced a red rubber ball.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unbelievable. So it just kept going and getting bigger and bouncing all over the sky. And I made sure to hold my camera steady, you know, to make sure it was not me shaking it. So,
we'll have to get that footage. We'll show
Yeah, I'd
like
to see it.
Yeah.
Who should I send it to?
Well, you have my mom's. Well, yeah, are you still on Facebook? You're still on Facebook too, right?
I am. I'm not under very much, but yeah, I am. Yeah. And I'll have to figure out how to get from my phone to Facebook, because I'm tech stupid.
Well, I mean, if you text we'll figure it out, because if you text my mom, she can text it to me too, so.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Yeah, it's a really interesting video.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, when I was driving home, I forgot to tell you this, driving up from Tennessee, I was on 65. 1 a.m., it was like 3 a.m., okay? I'm the only car on the expressway. And all of a sudden, my car cuts out entirely.
Huh, well, that's terrifying. I'm glad to hear you're okay.
Yeah, but I mean, can you imagine driving and then all of a sudden the entire power to your car cuts off? You have to like manage to get it over to the side of the road and it's like, what just went on here? I mean, I've never heard of a vehicle doing that other than, you know, the aliens coming in and shutting it down.
That could be. There have been haunted. Bob did do a long time ago, like a haunted car show. I think
I did do a haunted car episode.
Yeah,
yes,
that's long in the database. Probably
not as more recent than Johnny Appleseed. I'll say that much.
Yeah, so.
Well, thank you so much
for idea.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling in, cousin Elise. We appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, I'll be in touch. And as
sure.
I said, I am very well researched on every cryptid, so I will be watching you and calling in and discussing, okay?
Perfect. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Elise.
All right, have a great night. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
All right. So when it comes to like the family, so it's like the family tree, right? For you. So it's like a family tree. Do you guys like hang upside down because vampires like off the, you know, by your feet?
We're all vampires.
You're all vampires. Yes. What, or like, what's the vampire version of a family tree? Like the family coffin?
Yeah, I guess you could say like you just put them together.
Yeah, you just kind of. Yeah, we'll go with the that. Family burial plot?
Sure. We'll do that too as well.
Or family castle? I don't know. Now, castles? Colin, I sent something over to you via Messenger, if you could take a peek.
You just sent something to me, okay.
Yep. So I'm going to get to our next news article. And I appreciate your the family bonding experience we had there. That was really nice. Yeah. All right, so I have the last one for us, Colin. It's a little...
What is this?
Terrifying is what it is. Mm. All right, so this is from NPR WBEZ Chicago, specifically. It's written by Bill Chappell. A robot gets a face of living skin that allows it to smile. And, Colin, I sent you that over if you're able to...
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrific.
It's probably too late to show the thing, but I'll show it on this camera right now.
I'll keep reading while you're pulling it up. If humanoid robots make you a bit queasy, would it help if they had fleshy faces that could make you smile? The uncanny feat is now a result of new technology using engineered living skin tissue and human-like ligaments to give robots a more natural smile, according to Tokyo University researchers who unveiled their work this week. In this study, we managed to replicate human appearance to some extent by creating a face, folks, with the same surface material as a structure as humans, Professor Shoji Takeuchi, the team leader, said in a news release. In the process, he added, we identified new challenges, Count Panic, such as the necessity for surface wrinkles and a thicker epidermis to achieve a more human-like appearance. The approach promises to make robots more lifelike, and in the future, the researchers say, similar techniques could also be used on humans in the cosmetics and plastic surgery industries, and their findings were published in the journal Cell Reports Physical Science. To overlay and connect the lab-produced skin on a robotic skeleton, a layer of collagen gel containing cultured human dermal fibroblasts, a type of connected tissue cell, binds to an innovative system of tiny V-shaped perforations in the surface, letting the skin move with an underlying structure without tearing or peeling. The work of muscles creating a smile and other motions is done by actuators. Takeuchi's Bio-Hybrid Systems Laboratory has previously engineered skin that can heal, created small robots with biological muscle tissue, and 3D-printed lab-grown meat. He said the latest work on living skin has a string of potential next steps. Self-healing's a big deal. Some chemical brand-based materials can be made to heal themselves, but they require triggers such as heat, pressure, or signals, and they do not proliferate like cells. Biological skin repairs minor lacerations as ours does, and the nerves and other skin organs can be added for the use of sensing and so on. It's critical for robots to have the ability to self-heal and self-repair, the researcher said in the study. Now, Colin, I need you to, I'm going to repeat that sentence, and I want you this to linger.
Yeah.
It is critical for robots to have the ability to heal and self-repair. It's critical, he says.
It's critical.
Because even small scratches could develop into serious impairments. Biometric robots could be even more realistic with thicker skin, Takeuchi said, adding that future projects could look to add sensors, pores, and even sweat glands and fat. The team's paper says their own work could bring insights into how human wrinkles are formed, and by incorporating more sophisticated actuators and eventually cultured muscle tissue, and their approach could help robots in the future move in fluid, human-like ways. For now, the robot can't feel its face, putting it in a category pioneered by Abel Tesfaye, a.k.a. The Weeknd. Not so long ago, many of us smiled when technology managed to put the singer's words about his face into the mouth of the U.S. president. Hashtag panics take. There's a lot to unpack there. So
very
take a breath. That's very eerie stuff.
And then, you know, what I see, she kind of showed off on the camera there earlier. The face itself, I know it's just a blob. It's not on any robot, technically, but... Just seeing that, just kind of oozing around is eerie enough. But the robots, yes, the robots need to reheal themselves, Bob, because what good are they if they can't reheal themselves? Very creepy.
1,000%. Okay. Do you want my good take or bad take on this first?
We'll do a bad take first.
God, why are we developing skin for robots?
I don't know.
Have you ever seen Blade Runner?
Yeah.
That's where we're going to with this, man. Mm. This is Blade Runner. We're going to have replicants.
Yeah.
Do you want replicants? Because that's what happens.
This is what happens. No.
This is how it starts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or you ever see like Resident Evil or played a Resident Evil video game with the T-virus and it kind of mutated people into like zombies and monsters? I mean, the list goes on of the science fiction thing. We talk about this, the introduction to the Weird Spooky News of the Week. This is an advancement on science that borderlines on science fiction. We are now creating 3D printed skin and the skin that could fit over a robot and it can smile. Which means it's giving it an emotion.
It's terrifying.
But here's the thing, Count. It can make the robot smile, but you know what's on the flip side of that coin, my friend?
What's that?
It can make it frown, too. They didn't mention that in the article.
Yeah, turn upside down.
Turn upside down. Well, how would you feel if you're talking to a robot and it just starts frowning and angry facing you?
Well, I don't know what's worse, a smiling robot or a frowning robot. They're both equally creepy, but probably, the frowning robot be worse there.
1,000,000% count panic. Scary stuff, my friend. Do you want my good take? Because I don't want to be a negative Nancy.
What is it?
I see the necessary applications in skin for human benefit. So what I'm getting at is, can this help a burn victim like get some form of like normalcy back? Because skin grafts can only get you so far.
Yeah.
And I'm not true. Legitimately, my mom suffered third degree burns on her feet before, and I know it never truly healed. It still warped the skin a little bit, but if this is something you can use, especially a face, right? Mm-hmm. If you're able to use this as a face and it's able to kind of fix the tissues and the person can feel however they're going to feel again, that'd be great. Same thing with like skin cancers or anything like that. If like this can help the skin out repair back to where it was or even better, I'm all more power to it. Do I see this for a straight cosmetic reason that's not medically beneficial? They're talking about trying to figure out the origins of why the human face wrinkles. I mean, I'm not a beauty expert person. If you see my face, you can tell that I am definitely made for radio and podcasting. I'm not into the beauty scene like that, but I would love to give a chance to get some people out there feeling like their skin could be theirs again, or maybe cause it to be less irritant or whatever it might be. More than just burn victims, rash victims, mm-hmm. or flesh eating disease, whatever it might be. I'd really like to see something like this be able to help those people. But I don't know why we're putting it on robots. I guess it's better testing it on a robot than an animal. But now they're talking about like making more skin for the robot, and it's like
whole body.
How much skin do you want to give a robot?
Yeah.
And there's an obvious thing here that I'm not going to point out. Any of our adult listeners could probably see where I'm going with this, and I'm going to stop there because we're a family friendly show.
Kids.
But where does it end? You catch my drift? That's That's where we're at.
Okay.
All right, Count. You ready to take a quick break?
Yeah. Sure.
All right. For our live fans, stick around. You're about to be just kind of hanging out for a minute and quiet, and you get to catch your breath. Me and Count Panic have an epic adventure to go on. And for you podcast fans, stick around. You're about to be hearing words from a show that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob.
What'd you do during break?
Bob, during the break, I made sure the robots that are currently out there did not have a face. I was checking every robot throughout the community. They did not have a face just yet, a skin face. But it's coming down the pike, it sounds like, Bob. It's coming down the pike. What did you do?
You know, I did something that I never thought I would do in my life.
What's that?
You know, I took up soccer.
Soccer?
I'm not very good at it. I might be a decent goalie, but I couldn't do anything else.
What made you take up soccer?
The Olympics just happened.
You're right. You had Olympic fever.
Olympics might have ended yesterday, 2 days ago.
A couple days ago, yeah.
You know, the Olympics might have ended a couple days ago, but Olympic fever is still there. It's
all year round.
Yep. So I tried out for the American soccer team for 2028.
And so you're going to be in there?
No, I didn't make the team.
Oh, okay. Well, you tried.
I tried. That's the important thing.
That's the moral of the story is you tried.
Now count.
Yeah.
What's the temperature outside? It's a bit on the hot end, right?
Yeah, I mean, summer, what type weather, yeah.
What if we took a story that relates to the summer in the most polar opposite way?
What's that?
I'm going to take us away from the hot and tropical and humid weather, and we're going to take you all the way up to Alaska.
We're going to Alaska?
We're going to Alaska
What's
this week.
What's the temperature in Alaska?
I mean, it's cooler.
Cooler.
It's cooler there, and you know, it's this. We're talking more about like the upper parts of Alaska. We're going to be talking about some Inuit lore this week. So, like the Inuit areas surrounding Alaska, and we're talking about essentially a were-otter.
A were what?
A were-otter.
A were-otter.
A were-otter.
What is that?
Well, why don't we tell you a little bit about it? Now I'm going to tell you guys. Now, this is a quick little spooky PSA for all of our little ghoul scouts out there. You might be like, wow, I'm going to let my guard down and let Bob tell me this cute story about were-otters. Because otters are cute and, you know, cuddly and they're not dangerous at all. The were-otters are terrifying.
Scary.
I'm just letting you guys know. So, are you ready to dive in?
Yeah.
All right. So, let's talk a little bit about this. And I'm going to be reading an article from Only in Your State. This is written by Catherine Armstrong. So Alaska has some of the most incredible animals, but there is more adorable animal. But is there more of an adorable animal than an otter? They're charming like little stuffed animals floating around the river and giving hugs to each other. You probably can't imagine that sea otters ever could be connected with a creepy legend. But the Tlingit people have a legend about the playful creatures that will send chills down your spine. Enter the Alaska legend of the Kushtaka. It's hard to find a more charming, adorable animal than the sea otter, and quite a few of them are those otters call Alaska home. Though they now live in relatively peaceful harmony, it always wasn't like that for these beloved local creatures. Alaska's sea otter population was completely decimated during the 19th century due to, unfortunately, the fur trade. But it was reintroduced in the 60s. Today, the state has a population of 26,000 of these playful creatures, which is a disgrace and awful. Otters are a mammal generally native to the North Pacific Ocean. They're small on the scale of marine animals, but they make up for it in adorable habits, like hugging. They are genuinely playful in nature, similar to dogs, which makes them very appealing to humans. In the United States, you could find wild sea otters in Washington, Oregon, and California. And our neighbors in Mexico also have a population. Unfortunately, despite the efforts to repopulate the sea otter population, including bans on hunting them, which is extremely important, the animals are still considered endangered. And this goes out to all my otter hunters for sport. Cut it out. They're endangered. While we might think these animals are the sweetest thing on the planet, the Tlingit people have a legend about them that will keep you up at night. Sometimes even terrifying things come in cute, cuddly packages. The coastal Tlingit people live in Alaska and Canada and have a known history of going back at least 10,000 years. These folks have been around since that, and they know a thing or two about the planet and the animal life in the territory. The people believe that some of the otters were actually shape-shifting otters that looked like men. These creatures have an evil purpose. to trap their victims' souls and prevent them from reincarnating, which is part of their belief system in that particular tribe. It certainly wouldn't be the first time a cute face has been used to ensnare victims. These shape-shifting otters are called the Kushtaka or the Kushtakaha. The legend goes like this. As you're walking through your village or hunting in the woods or fishing in the sea, a man or group of men approach you. They look just like kinsmen and you don't have a clue that they're actually Kushtaka. In some cases, these malevolent creatures appear when you're lost or injured and claim to have intentions to rescue you. However, they lead you deeper into the wilderness and either tear you to pieces or turn you into a Kushtaka, which prevents your soul from being able to reincarnate. Pretty terrifying stuff. You definitely don't want to come across a Kushtaka in Alaska at night. We can see where some trust issues might develop from this legend. Groups of Kushtaka are especially dangerous. They might lure you toward them by screaming or making noises that sound like women or children in distress. But once they see you coming, you'll never escape. This can be an ad for the buddy system. Travel with someone else and you're less likely to need the help from a group of strange and eventually sinister men. The very cuteness of the otters is what makes the Alaska Kushtaka so dangerous, according to the Tlingit people. Because we're so drawn to their playful nature, it's easy to miss the fact that these shapeshifters really want to consume our souls and condemn us to spend an eternity wandering the frozen tundra. Luckily, there is a safeguard against Kushtaka travel. Alaska's second cutest animal is one that is plentiful around the region. Dogs! Man's best friend saves us again, this time from evil spirits and an eternity without afterlife. The Kushtaka are supposedly terrified of dogs. Luckily, Alaska has plenty of furry, fearsome sled dogs to keep their villages safe from harm. It's said that a fire might be another effective way to keep the shape-shifting otters away. Alaskan mothers are fond of this legend and tell it to their children to keep them from wandering too far from home. What do you think, Count Panic? Do you think these things are real?
Bob, so far I'm on the fence about it. They might be real. Who am I to doubt it so far? But it might be a little bit hooey at the moment.
Oh, but Count Panic! Count Panic, what if I told you I have...
You have one?
I don't own a Kushtaka.
Okay.
But I do want to have a conversation with you about a post that was written about somebody's experience with a Kushtaka.
Sure.
This was posted on one of our favorite places in the world, Reddit, specifically in the No Sleep category. This was written by Rosemary and Ravens. Are you ready?
I'm ready, yeah.
I grew up along the river. The river ran clear sometimes, and the river ran steady sometimes, and the water was true in its route sometimes. The river was tricky in that manner, and even my family would be wary of it and check every day where it would go next. I was never allowed on the river, at least not alone. Having a single father in the middle of nowhere, Alaska isn't so bad. With four siblings and a village to raise me, it didn't appear any different than any other home. Scratch that, four half-siblings. I ended up somewhere in the middle of two marriages, and it seemed my father had terrible luck with women, or more so, terrible luck with his wives. But that's an entirely another story. The oldest two were from his first marriage, two beautiful girls, one with big green eyes and the other blue. You could tell their mother was white like my father. The younger two was from his current wife, who was a native Alaskan like my mother. Sharp cheekbones and that native look other people would call just that native Alaskan Inuit sort of vibe to it. You know what I'm saying, Count?
Yeah.
Really, we can't help that's where our faces naturally rest. One was my age, and she was from my stepmom's first marriage, and the other only a couple years younger than me. Then there was me, right in the middle. Born outside of marriages, not uncommon. What a kicker. What was the kicker was my birth, immediate abandonment, and my mother disappearing from the hospital, leaving me alone. Not that I hold anything against her. I regularly think, my poor father and six women, no wonder he's a bush pilot and does the mail run. Growing up, I had my oldest sibling who was old enough to watch all of us. We would play in the woods if we weren't working. What, you think we get out of chores just because we're children? We were at home in the woods and not even the animals scared us. We learned how to sight their movement, feel them watching, and smell them early enough to where we could make it safety to our home. When our senses failed, we were able to depend on our dogs to warn us and shepherd us from the first sign of trouble. Still, no matter how familiar we were with the woods, woods. We'd hear my stepmom sometimes yell at the other girls, keep your sisters away from the river. We never listened. We knew her warning was to not leave me alone by the river, but we don't want to know what the big deal was at the time. Our summers would pass this way, with us constantly dirty, covered in bug bites, racing through the woods and splashing on the river's edge. I must have finally been about 14 at the time. I graduated from small tasks like mending nests that were better suited for small, dexterous hands, to chopping and hauling wood and preparing for hunting and trapping season. My oldest sister and I drew a short straw that day and were stuck by preseason trapping preparation. My sister and I would regularly shoot glares at the other three running around. The second oldest was fresh water, and the younger two, other two, trending to the nets, dogs, or helping with hauling fish. It seemed like it would be a normal enough day of chatting about how cute the coal boys were, if I'd seen auntie leaving new uncle's home. Under our words, we had agreements that something wasn't right. We sat facing each other and watching our backs, and we would strain ears during lulls in conversation. We couldn't bring ourselves to say anything, though. The dogs were still silent. Perhaps we were paranoid after the bear coming through the area 2 days earlier. But to acknowledge whatever was there could be under undoing from spirits. By mid-afternoon, our sisters were worn out enough to where we can be conscripted into hauling salmon by cleaning them by the river, even with our hands raw. It was years of repetition. Split up the stomach, slice along the side, flip, slice the other, and toss the head and the innards in the other other into the river. My youngest had joys of harvesting eggs and carcasses when we saw them. The oldest and I were racing, and I had made the lead as the others took turns cleaning and running the buckets to the house, wherever the final prep locations were. To our dismay, when two of us finally finished up, none of our other siblings kept count. We rinsed our hands in the river as the other girls cleaned up the stations for the night. My older sister went in to help, and I took the time to continue soothing my ravaged hands. I had nicked myself on traps earlier that day and was still miffed about it. The silence in the woods was a relief. I finally had a moment alone for the first time in a while as all of our gear was brought to camp. I took sips of water and soon felt something just wrong. The skin on my arm prickled as if the feeling of being watched returned. I listened closely to my surroundings, bringing my head up and slowly scanning up and down the river before shifting on my heels to check behind me. Nothing. And then I realized that what felt wrong was I was alone by the river. Silly me. It was nothing more than the eeriness of a new experience in the woods. I shook my head and made my shoulders relax. There was no reason to be afraid of being alone in the river. I stood, wiping dirt off myself and doing one last scan, and then practically fell over. I saw a man standing across the river, an absolutely beautiful man who gave me a sly grin. The hair on the back of my neck rose, and not many came along the offshoot of the Yukon to where our camp was. Never mind his, well, nudity. Aside from his presence and the fact that he was naked, what gave me chills was his eyes. There was no definition between the iris and the pupil, and the whites were very barely visible. I looked behind me, and none of my family was around. Turning back, another man was suddenly there, and I kept an eye for further movement. The only other living creatures were flashes of salmon in the clear water and the beavers swimming along the river's edge. I swallowed back to call for them, and I felt something coming to my throat. I'd be breaking the silence, and there'd be no coming back from their acknowledgement. Something about the way the river had begun to slow and move lazily along brought another edge of my fear and affirmed my suspicions. I began a diagonal retreat, still managing to catch on a route. Regaining my footing, I looked up. There was now another man, now on my side of the river. From this side in a brief breeze, I could smell something. It was a familiar animal smell, but I couldn't take the time to decipher it. I bit my lip and held the urge to turn and run. I could now see hair in some places, the sides of their legs and up their shins, spreading down their shoulders from the hair and very thick on the forearms. They were clearly individuals not like any other person. Brown hair, black hair, tall, average. The only thing that remained the same among them were smiles and smirks. I wasn't sure if they were mischievous or insidious. They were grins that were taunting, and their eyes flashed a strange playfulness. It was like they were calling to me to game on the playground, but they haven't told me the rules yet. My eyes flickered to the movement on the other side of the river where the other two slid into the water. And the next thing I know, two beavers began swimming across the river before the two men climbed out on my side. Now, Central Alaska. Kashtakas are known for being tricksters. It can either be in fun or lead you to your death. By the way, beavers, otters, it's kind of a hit or a miss depending on which part of Alaska you talk about with the Kashtaka, but primarily it's otter, but the story remains the same, folks. Just quick little note there. I felt every muscle of mine tense as I remember my elders warning us to stay away from the shapeshifters. While not always bad, their tricks could be deadly dangerous. My slow retreat continued for minutes with them moving casually and smoothly. The hair stood on my neck and wafts of their familiar but alien scent would crawl to my skin. Eventually, the men stopped staring and smirking before turning back to the river. It seemed they'd grown disinterested and began talking low amongst themselves, and one even laughed. They cast one last glance in my way and left. Even as I watched their backs moving away and eventually them sitting on the water's edge, I didn't turn from the river. I moved slowly, one step at a time, towards safety. Soon enough, my youngest child called for me, and I instinctively turned to her, struggling to tell her to run. Before I could make a noise, they were all suddenly moving unnaturally fast from the corner of my eye, and I couldn't get the words off fast enough. I was cut off as she yelled, "Rosemary, come on! We have to hang these fish." I sprinted as hard as I could through the remaining woods, not bothering with caution. I managed to tackle my youngest sister with a hand over her mouth. Breathingly, heavily, I stared through the woods back of the river, and I saw nothing but the calm flowing water. The men had disappeared, and a not unfamiliar splash could be found. I received a weird look from my sisters all night after my story, but the berating my stepmother gave them and me wouldn't leave our minds for years to come. Still, it wasn't the strangest part of the end of the debacle. The next day, we woke into an unusual sight. The riverbank was completely washed out to the first line of trees. My stepmother gripped my shoulder tightly when she saw what happened to the river, as almost as if she blamed me. I was never left alone by the river again. Fast forward. I was finally 20. I had to run away from the woods and was living in the city going to college. I shed my wild times in the woods for another form of wild time in the city. I returned home from the holidays and ran to the city as soon as I could. It was at this point I'd forgotten our ways and attributed our stories to that. Just stories to make children behave or give adults an out for vile behavior. This day happened on one of my summer breaks. It was so many years later that I'd forgotten about my childhood experience. I remembered that there was a year when the riverbank was badly washed out and nothing more. I squatted by the river, humming as I cleaned my fish knife. It was an old song that I'd been taught. I remember a few words as I truly focused on the language my grandmothers and aunts taught. Only the meaning stuck. A woman was singing, longing for her lover to come back to her. He had hunted across the frozen water and downriver only for it to thaw. He wasn't able to return home from his island and was stranded as she attempted to canoe over to him during the summer, but the river wouldn't allow it and she remained on our side upriver while he was never able to return. I had asked once why he just didn't come back in the winter and I received a grave look in silence. Someone went back beating and a few others told me it was because the river swallowed them. The river swallows in many ways. That's when I felt the prickles on my skin and my ears felt warm. I flicked my eyes to the side and find nothing. Still an unfamiliar animal was hunting. I continued humming and pulled my knife closer and once again scanned the world around me. As before, nothing. I still couldn't deny something was there that shouldn't be. At first, I noticed the scent that could be a part of the woods and river. A stronger note of birch and pine. Then subtly, of moss and lichen over trees. I knew we didn't have lichen in this part of the river for a while longer. Mind wrapped around the two scents before it ended in a musk that I couldn't describe but somehow knew. It wasn't overpowering, but somehow all the familiar was wrong. For the first steps, I watched my footing along the riverbank before looking up again. At first, I didn't understand how the sight of a beautiful man across the river felt familiar to me, but so disturbing. I swallowed back my desire to call out. The threat of acknowledging him set sirens off in my head. Somewhere, it'd be a breach of the prac, and I'd have the debt to spirit to pay. All I could do was back away slowly. No one should ever be this far out near our camp without our noticing. I whistled for our dogs, Suta, as I slid back. One step, two step, five step, and on the ground. I would later berate myself for being like the women in movies. The hair rose on the back of my arms and my ears felt warmth over my shoulder. I flicked my eyes from the side and found nothing. I jerked myself back and two men now on my side of the river with malicious grins. Their scent grew stronger and I was losing my logical grip. The tangy scent caused my mind so much confusion. I wanted to run for them at the same time and it was all alluring. There was almost a calming vanilla under it all. That's when a dog barked in the distance, and what could be voices were like petals on the wind, barely able to be grasped. I shook my head back to reality. No one could hear me. It took everything for me not to shudder as I recognized the hair and fur in unfamiliar places. I'd seen it before and described it many times and recognized them as Kushtaka. As embarrassing as it sounds, yes, I was terrified of the beaver men. Beaver men, not werewolf. Beaver men. Were beaver. Or were otter, depending on what part of Alaska you're in. My brain was scanning trying to figure out what it could be at them. Me, living in this city so long, I could barely bring myself to admit the irony of the situation. Of being a grown woman afraid of a beaver. Yes, that bites and tear through destroy flesh, but still sounds embarrassing. I backed away as quickly as I could while watching the blank eyes come across and a movement increased out of the corners of my eyes. As wary as I was of more of obvious danger, I couldn't help but eye the river. Why did the river have to change course now? Why did it have to seem in foam and swirl in stronger eddies? How could it suddenly move so much faster? I felt myself shaking and the knife in my hand seemed childish. Being overpowered, outnumbered, and about to be treated in God knows what kind of manner, were women treated as unfortunate victims to this? Was everyone killed quickly or slowly? Or would I be able to be long enough to be toyed and allowed to go home and like the stories I've heard from my family? I slashed my knife out at one of the men nearest me and slid as far sideways as around a tree as I could before another drastically shortened the distance between us. The playful looks could be considered just that. If I didn't feel like they were a sociopath finding fun and tearing off the wings of a butterfly. His eyes were almost pitch black and the minimal whites were almost red with vessels. They were just as soulless as any other rodent ready to tear things apart. A hand gripped the back of my neck, treating me like a puppy in their scruff, and the world turned sideways as I was suddenly dragged along the ground. I screamed and struggled as the earth dug into my chest and legs. I think he even smacked my face a few times into the roots on purpose. I was pulled upright by my neck and hair, only to have my mouth quieted by a leathery hand. I stared into blown out pupils, and I couldn't decide if he was hazardous or playful. Maybe it would depend on who you were in this situation, as I quickly realized which I was in. The impish smirk held no humanity, and I waited as he stared at me, searching at me. It only took a few heartbeats before I heard a voice, rappy and deused, behind me, saying, "Does the river love you better than your mother?" I couldn't understand anything more than a sudden water hitting the back and flooding my mouth. I was now in the raging river, rolling and tumbling with no way to get my bearings. It may have been a minute or only seconds before I could break the surface again. I gasped as deeply as I could before turning to face what I expected was downstream, and that water foamed over my head, and I felt it jerking my hand on my right leg before hitting the riverbed and at least 2.5 or 3 meters below me. I caught on a branch and felt the river pushing against me, never releasing its hold. It was like a giant hand that had pressed me into a solid piece of wood and didn't let me go. I continued to panic and struggle before the final release, only to hit a rock a meter later and feel the shock go from my whole leg through my whole body. I screamed and water flowed in my mouth, trying to take any bit of life from me. I turned into a ball and tried to right myself when my back was dragged against a riverbed. Sharp rocks and roots dug into, trying to purchase and hold me there. I was beginning to hold last hope of surfacing when my fingers finally broke free of the water. The heave of air I had was full spray, yet I couldn't have asked for more. Briefly, I thought the movement under the corner of my eye was debris before I felt a body hugging my back and laughter in my ear. I had a moment of reprieve as whatever it said something in my native tongue and paused. I knew they were waiting for a response, and I regretted not paying attention to my elders. I felt frustration in their chest as they shoved me away and something else pulled my hair down. I reached and pleaded for the surface as once again I got hit with a root and rubble. This time I was caught. I wanted to thank my lucky stars. I wanted to thank the gods. I wanted to thank Raven and every Ina I could. Instead, I screamed my first full gasp of water as my arm broke between branches. I couldn't move. My arm was caught and tears would be streaming down my face if I weren't underwater. Struggle as I might, the river was just too powerful. I hung by my broken arm. As hard as I pulled and kicked, the river wouldn't let me go. It almost goaded me as I felt my other fingertips reach the roots in the bank, momentarily safely less than an arm length away. I felt teasing as if my broken arm would be released and my hand shoved down many times. It may have been only twice, but it felt like it was hundreds. Every scream shoved more water down my throat, and during one of the screams, I felt fingers get shoved in my mouth, and they held my tongue down, just to try to force more water down my throat. As quickly as it started, something pulled my shoulders and I was suddenly free. The river shoved me to the bottom, and as I was able to rebound to the surface, now finding it barely a meter deep and slower than before, breathing, I gasped and screamed. My relief was short-lived once again as I felt a body holding my back. This time, they held my forehead and I was forced to look up and I heard a deep voice in English. "Breathe deep, little one. For your sake, never come back." I felt a searing pain and almost tearing through every muscle in my shoulder and heard laughter around me. Then my head was shoved under again. This time I remember only my head cracking in pain and now the shallow riverbed. It's been years now. Aunties used my story to teach how important it is not to play along the water alone. After all, even adults can be hurt by it. It took 2 days before I could only found a couple miles away from my home, body beaten and broken. No ever commented about how the marks and handprints were all over my body or the abnormal bites along my shoulder. I'd have much preferred being warned against than an abusive victim of the river. I'll stay along the main body of the Yukon, but never in it. My family calls me lazy because I never come back for fishing season, and I don't care. I don't want to find out if I was saved by the river or by the bodies that pulled me around like a doll. I don't think either of them cared. I don't know which of the stories of the Kushtaka are real. I don't know if they were saving me or were they monsters trying to kill me. My aunts will always make the children believe I was pulled away to teach a lesson never to be alone by the river. Still, my father and stepmother make it sound like the Kushtaka were saving me from the river and had drawn in my months before, as if they were bullies on a playground who had gone a step too far and tried to correct their mistake. But I know it's not the way they were bullies trying to kill me, not their mischief getting out of hand or trying to correct it. It's that they're guardians of the river, a sibling protecting it from heartbreak. A river was looking for the one that got away, and they'll never find it. The one that got away is long gone somewhere in the spring snow, and I'll be the only, I'll be the tail skirts if it ever reaches for me again. What'd you think?
Oh, Bob, beautiful story. By the way, during that story, we got an update on the weather in Schererville from South Shore Steph. It was 70. Now we're sitting at 69 degrees, but thank you for the update.
Hey, weather folks, I'm Bob After Dark.
Weather folks. But Bob, yeah, that was a very detailed layout of that whole situation. But still, the where, ours in general, can we just say how cool they are?
So calm.
Yeah.
It's a story on the internet, man.
Yeah.
You can't believe everything you hear on the internet, and everything you write is fake, and, you know, could be fake, could be anything. But the way the story was written, do I believe it to be true?
Yeah. I mean, it could be, like I said, it could be a little bit hooey, but in everything you read on the internet, it may not be necessarily true. But, Bob, who am I really to say on this one? I think, I don't know, maybe it is true after all.
I would say so.
Yeah.
It's an interesting case count, and I'm going to buy into it. There are things that we do not understand. The native people, especially around the Arctic region, the Inuit people, and all the different kind of cultures that, like, around that, don't have written history about things, not a ton of written history about these things that were causing issues for them for hundreds and thousands of years. It is not my place to tell them that in entire generations that what they were saying was wrong. Even the character in this story, the person who wrote it, they say that they felt like they were being treated in this form of a lesson. I don't know. It's an interesting story nonetheless.
Yeah, no, for sure. Very interesting, Bob, and thank you for delivering it here today on Bob After Dark.
Absolutely. So, after everything, Kushtaka, real or not?
Real.
Real. I'm going with real, too.
Okay.
Any closing words for our audience this evening?
Everybody continue to have a great summer.
And we'll see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, I see no reason why not.
All right, folks. Thanks for watching and listening.
Always find us on the podcast.
Absolutely. Do we have another caller?
No, I'm just getting the song ready.
Hey, guys. Thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to wish you all sweet dreams. To my mom, good night and sweet dreams. And to my dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Remember, everybody, there are two important rules of Bob After Dark. Are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.